Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1 with Miriam O'Callaghan.
My guests this morning are a couple and they found happiness together in later life. Eilish O'Carroll is an actress who plays the role of Winnie, best friend of Brendan O'Carroll's hugely successful and very funny Mrs. Brown on stage and television. She's also in real life Brendan's sister. Her partner Marion O'Sullivan is a stage manager currently working with the Mrs. Brown stage shows. They've also worked together on Eilish's critically acclaimed one-woman show called Live, Love, Laugh. You're both very welcome here.
Oh, thank
you. Good morning,
Miriam.
You're a bit nervous, Marion, you were saying.
I am indeed.
Because you don't normally do interviews.
No, I don't. I'm usually backstage wearing black clothes in the dark with a torch.
Where did you meet Eilish? Where did you both meet?
We met in Cork City in an organisation called LINC, which stands for Lesbians in Cork. I had not long moved into West Cork and I felt terribly isolated down there, and I decided it was time I actually really got out and made some friends. I saw an advert for this organisation and they were running like a support group, 6-week workshop for, I think the name they gave it was 40 plus group. Fancy name for our ones, really. But at least you knew you were going to see, you know, you're going to meet somebody of your own peer group.
Yeah.
And so I had been, I joined it probably about 6 months before Marion actually came in. And I remember that the day she actually came in and I thought, there's a lovely lady who obviously is very sure of herself and very happy in her skin. That's what I thought anyway.
And you, Marion?
You know, my life was kind of changing dramatically at that stage in that the company I'd worked for 28 years was closing down and we were all being made redundant. So my life was about to change dramatically. And so I had a good think, really, and wanted to change my life. And I really wanted to find other lesbians who were, there were supposed to be loads of them in Cork. Now, I'd never seen any. So I just wanted to go and find out really where they were. So a friend of mine had joined this group as a social group and said to me, you need to go. These are a really nice bunch of women, so you need to go, and you need to go next Monday because it's only once a month. And then she went off back to America on a holiday, so I was left to go on my own. But so I did walk in, and that was really hard to actually walk, take that first step in the door of LINC, even at 49 years of age, was, oh my God, no, I'm a real lesbian. I mean, I'm in here, my one leg, one foot is in the door, and this is it, I'm out.
And did you find that even difficult to do at that stage?
Yes, I found that really difficult to do. And I also found our local pub, Loafers, which is probably one of the oldest gay pubs in Ireland, is not far from LINC. Mm. And it took me a long time before I could stop standing in front of the door, looking left and right and backwards to see if there was anybody I knew before I took that step in. Mm.
So at what stage you met there, but did you, I suppose, become more of a couple than just friends?
Well, we were friends for about 6 months. And so we did a lot together, you know, movies and dinner parties with other friends. And it kind of was a journey for both of us. I'd already embraced it, I think. I'd already come to the stage where I thought, no, this is what I am and this is who I am. And I'm really happy and I'm great. But after getting to know Marion, I realised that actually it was just the very first stage for her. And although Marion had been aware that she was a lesbian, she'd never actually lived the life, never. So it was a huge, huge step for her. But I actually understood it. I really did, because I had gone through that journey of, you know, will we be rejected? And you know, how are we going to actually tell the family and so on and so forth. So it was tough. But I think I was at just that little bit ahead of Marion. So I was able to support her. And we laughed about it, which more than anything else. We really did laugh. We laughed a lot. And I suppose
and we still
probably
do.
And we still do. Now, probably that was the biggest attraction. Well, certainly for me, was Marion has a terrific sense of humour and can see the funny side of anything. And it was just to have that laughter back in my life was just fantastic. So, yeah, we laughed a lot.
And you're together 10 years now?
10 years.
10 years this year, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to get married, have a partnership?
I think I'm far too young. And I also feel that marriage is an institution, and I'm far too young to be in an institution at this stage of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm about 65.
She's unsure, aren't you, Mary?
I'm very unsure.
Sure of yourself. We have talked about it, but I think we have the best of both worlds. We're both very independent, both financially and personally. I have my house down in my little cottage in West Cork, and Marion lives in Cork City. And because of the work we do now together, that's an ideal situation, because if we get back home, I can stay at Marion's, you know, for the first couple of days, and then I'll go back home and we can give each other that space. And we spend a lot of time down in West Cork. So we're really lucky. So we kind of think, what's the benefit? And the fear that if we changed it, would it change us? And we do feel a bit young to make that decision.
It's very polite to wait to be asked.
Yeah, we might get that done within the hour.
Absolutely not. I can see that door on my right shoulder.
But you will go into this much later on, but as you were married before.
I was, yes.
So, to a man.
Yes.
So how is it different maybe now, just sharing your life with Marion?
I feel much more comfortable in sharing my life with a woman. It's different from the point of view of there are no designated roles. And I know they're preconceived, aren't they? And they're conditioned, you know, that expectation you have when you get married and you do this and he does that. But that doesn't happen in our relationship, because it's not, the bins need to go out, end of story, right? Who does it doesn't matter, as long as the bins go out. So we have fallen into routines. I do like to clean. I like to keep house.
Look at you, Marion.
Yeah. And Marion loves to cook and shop.
Great.
Right?
Iron.
So,
I'm a great iron.
Great
I'm
iron.
Iron.
Oh, my God.
The queen of the ironing board.
Queen Marion. Of the ironing board.
But don't ask me to do anything that requires gardening, because it's dirty. You get dirty.
See,
I
love
dirty,
gardening.
And Eilish loves it.
Well, you're a perfect couple then.
So we're perfect in that respect, right? That we just have fallen into those roles. We never kind of said, oh, well, you know, I'm the gardener because I'm the man.
When you go places in Ireland now, do you still have to explain to people you're a couple? Or at what stage do people clock it?
Some people are pretty astute, but... Like, for instance, hotels. You'll book a hotel.
Oh, yeah.
And inevitably we will turn up and it's twin room.
Right.
No, we actually ask for a double.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, well, we've got you in a twin.
Yeah.
Right? Because the assumption is we're two women and we're sharing a room. We're sharing the cost. And that's tough. It's tough to actually sometimes find it, you know, is it really worth to make, you know, are we always making that statement? To a degree, you're always coming out. You're always coming out. You meet people for the first time in a nice group situation, and the assumption will be that I'm either married or I'm divorced. And at what stage do I go, you know, do you introduce yourself and say, hello, my name is Eilish, I'm a heterosexual? You don't.
No.
Right? So why should I go, hello, my name is Eilish and I'm a lesbian, before you go assuming that I have a husband at home or I'm widowed or divorced or whatever?
Yeah, that's
at what
really
point do you are you constantly saying? So I don't constantly say it. It's different when it'd be great if you could bring your husband. Actually, I will bring my partner, Marion. Yeah. That would be really nice. So that's the point when I make it.
Do you find it similar, Marion?
Yeah, but I've become really strong. Like I'm extremely non-confrontational. I will run a mile, but I've actually decided. You know, I'm now 59 years of age, that I can now be assertive enough to say to the receptionist, no, actually, that's a double. You don't want twins? No, we'd like a double, please. Thank you. So that's great.
Good, it's your lives. It's who you
listen,
are.
I don't know, maybe 20 years ago, I'd probably be totally radical. Yeah. Thank God I'm a bit older. I might burn something down or something.
But look, you both love to dance, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it.
So we're going to take the first piece of music. Tell me what, it's the Mika one?
It's the Mika one. It's Grace Kelly. And from the moment I heard the song, all I ever want to do when this music is on is dance.
Is dance.
Badly. Mm-hmm. Probably around the kitchen.
No, you're not
badly.
A bad dancer, Marion. You're a very
That's
good dancer.
That's a matter of opinion. But anyway, this song really makes me want to dance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to listen to it now, and I'm going to make you both dance
we'll
for me.
We'll get up for you.
Okay, let's listen now to Mika's Grace Kelly.
Do I attract you? Do do I repulse you with my queasy smile? Am I too dirty? Am I too flirty? Do I like what you like? I could be wholesome, I could be loathsome, guess I'm a little bit shy. Why don't you like me? Why don't you like me without making me try? I try to be like Grace Kelly, but all her looks were too sad.
Grace Kelly there from Mika. And you both got up and danced. And you're very good dancers.
Thank you, Marion.
I wish my listeners could have seen you. But listen, Marion, when did you first know you were lesbian?
Well, I always knew I was different.
From what age, like?
Well, I was a real tomboy, like from 4-ish, I suppose. So I knew I was different. And I was just accepted as...
tomboy.
As tomboy. And, you know, when we'd all play in the street and whatever, you know, when they'd be picking the brides and the bride and the bridegrooms. I also was a bridegroom. Like, I never got the chance
to... never got picked as the bride.
I never got picked as the bride or even the bridesmaid. Yes. It's like, when they were all looking for bridegrooms, it was me. So, yeah, it was a different, very different time.
Tell me about your parents and where you grew
up. Well, I was born in Cove and I grew up in Cove with my parents. I'm the youngest of four. I actually, good Catholic girl that I was, I stayed and lived with my parents until I was about 31, 32. And that's when I bought my own house and left home.
And were they, I suppose they were traditionally Catholic couple,
yes, they were.
They?
Yeah. Yes, they were. And they were like, my mum was 42 when I was born. So like by the time I was in my 20s, she was in her 60s. So
at what stage though, I mean, apart from always being the bridegroom in the school place, at what stage did you in fact think, I might in fact be lesbian?
In my 20s, I mean, I had gone through the teenage, Sunday night hops in the local boys club and, you know, where all the girls were on one side and all the boys were on the other. And, you know, we were all going out with guys at the time. And I think really until my mid to late 20s, I decided I'm really not enjoying this. You know, while I knew everybody else kept saying to me, oh, God, you know, you're too fussy. You know, you shouldn't be. You're lovely. This is what I got. Mm-hmm. You're really nice. It would be lovely if you met a nice man. And I'd say, well, you know, I'm just, you know, not ready. No, you're far too choosy. So anyway, I just actually continued to live that. And I had a great, I lived in a very straight world. My friends were married and had kids. And, you know, other friends of mine who were straight and single, you know, we all socialised together, went on holidays together. There was always something missing. And now I know what that something really was until I decided that I was ready to do this, you know.
And at what stage was that? Like,
that was when I was 49.
Really? That was the first time?
Wow. Yeah.
Do you ever wonder, Marion, what it would have been like if you were growing up now? And I suppose that people are so aware now that in theory, although I suppose it's still difficult for some because of cyberbullying and stuff, that you could have come out when you were about 18 or something.
Oh, I think life is totally different now, yeah. Mm. Yeah. Lesbians are a lot more visible now. Like when I was growing up in my 20s, you know, there were people I knew were probably lesbians and I may not have even called them that, you know, but you know, like people would look at me and know.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah. We didn't put names on it. We didn't put labels on it. You didn't even discuss it. I mean, I never knew a lesbian. I never met a lesbian. I knowingly met a lesbian. Until, you know, my 40s. For you, Marion, you were telling me that it had more to do with the death of her parents. You know, that was quite traumatic for Marion. And then being totally alone, there's no distractions now. She's not going over on a Sunday to care for mum and dad. And I think she had that time then to sit down and think, what is my life about?
Would you have felt guilty about coming out when they were alive?
I think I'd actually have been afraid. That seems, you know, being a child of the 50s and the 60s, what I remember is fear. Fear of the nuns. You know, fear if you do something wrong, then you have to come and tell your mother. Fear your mother. You know, so, and I think the Catholic guilt, of course, which all Catholics were injected with at birth.
So it probably was, as I said, very liberating. When, obviously, tragically, that your parents died, but that it released you in a way to be
gay. Hugely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like they died very close to each other, like in about 3.5 years between them. So, you know, I was actually released from the burden of childhood.
You have three siblings, you were saying. Did any of them, do you think, suspect? Or
I'd say they all knew.
Did your parents ever suspect, or would they think like that?
I don't think they ever suspected. I was speaking to a nephew of mine the other night on Facebook, and we were talking about this, and he said that granddad, my father, asked him once. He had a very good relationship with my nephew. Did he know what a lesbian was? And I just immediately typed in, you know, did he mention my name? And Kieran said, no, he didn't. He didn't mention your name. He said, I don't think he had a clue.
But did you find it difficult to tell your siblings?
It was very funny because after I met Eilish, and I had come out and been in Link, you know, I was out to everybody then, and I still hadn't told my family. So it was coming up to Christmas, and we were meeting my family for
Christmas,
the Christmas drink. And yeah. I said, we were driving up, and I said to Eilish, I'm going to have to tell Mike tonight.
Yeah, she says to me, we're going to have to tell the family tonight. We are going to have to tell the family. I said, no, Marion, we are not going to do anything.
So I said,
that's your journey. I'm not sitting there while you go, by the way, I want you to know that I'm a lesbian and this is my lesbian
lover.
Partner. Yeah.
So anyway, I decided, no, I was going with it because this was like a burden. And I'd spoken to people about the best way to come out. And apparently the best way to come out to your family is to, if you have a partner, you come in and you say, Mary, this is Eilish. Eilish isn't my friend. She's my partner. So you're not embarrassing people with the word lesbian or gay or queer or anything like that. You know what I mean? So anyway, we have a drink. We come out of the pub. We're walking back to the house. And Mike, my brother, is saying, he's talking about this big piece of equipment that he's in his job. He's shifting. They're moving it from one place to the other.
Man talk.
Yeah. Man talk to his baby sister. And I'm thinking, I have to say it. So as he takes a breath, I said, Mike, I have to tell you something. And he said, what? And I said, Eilish is not my friend. She's my partner. I couldn't really repeat on daytime radio what he said, but it's like, really, I don't care. But anyway, as we were moving this thing, this is how we moved it, and we just continued to walk on, and that was it.
No big deal.
No big deal.
None whatever.
But was that a relief to you?
Huge. And he was more annoyed that I'd actually interrupted his moving this big piece of equipment story. You know, yeah. I've really ruined his flow, so...
But your trajectory to getting, accepting that you were gay is different, Eilish. Take me back to your childhood, because obviously you're Brendan and Carol's sister. First, remind me of where you all grew up.
We all grew up in Dublin. I had a very happy childhood, probably a little bit overcrowded, but, you know, who wasn't in those days?
How many of you were there again?
There was 11 of us originally, but there was 10 of us when I came along.
10 children?
10 children. And I was number 9, Brendan was number 10. Brendan being the baby and me being the baby girl. So we had probably the best of my mum because most of the rearing, the older children were looking after us, and my mum, you know, when she did have time for us, she had quality time for us. So I had no idea. I left Ireland when I was 19, went to England and I got married in England. I had two sons. Sadly, that marriage ended in divorce after about 8 years, and I remarried again to a lovely man. And I was coming up to my 40s, that time of your life, you know, when the kids are grown up, one's in university, the other one's in college. We're on the pig's back, I said to myself. We're just talking about our future. Do you know what? We might even go back to Ireland, settle in Ireland, retirement, right? Didn't seem that far away. And then I met a woman on a course, which started off as a friendship, and I fell madly in love with this woman. I mean, head over heels. I'm talking the heart beating, can't sleep, can't think, can't function. The stuff you see in movies, you know, was madness. It was total madness.
Was that a surprise to yourself?
Oh,
that
totally.
That you fell in love with a woman?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'd no history or thought process that I was kind of denying myself. It just happened. And my coping mechanisms weren't obviously great, looking back on it. Having said that, I don't think I could have handled it any differently. But my own internalised homophobia caused me a great deal of problems. I don't think I really handled the whole situation very well. But to make a long story, very painful, I did leave my husband. She left her husband. We tried to make a go of it, but it didn't. Sadly, it was never going to work. For all sorts of reasons, it was never going to work. But that was the catalyst, I think, for me.
And when you talk about internalised homophobia that you've had, what do you mean by that?
I considered myself a very, very broad-minded person until this happened to me. So what happened was that my conditioned response to being gay, it's abnormal. It's perverse. All the things that were in my head came to the fore, which surprised me. It sabotaged me because I thought, I'm an intelligent human being. I don't think like that. I don't consciously think like that. But here I'm now dealing with the reality of it. I'm dealing with this huge, it was huge for me. It was enormous. I couldn't tell anybody. I couldn't talk to my friends. I couldn't disclose it. So I battled with it for a couple of years.
Did you feel guilt?
Huge amount of guilt. I mean, what was this going to do to my family?
Yeah, you've two sons.
I have two sons. Two grown-up sons. What is it going to do to my family? What does it mean? And I think at the time I thought it meant that I have to lose everything. I have to lose it all, which is what happened. Thankfully, as time went on, you know, my sons actually had no issue with it whatsoever. My husband was extremely supportive. In fact, saved my life on so many different occasions.
That's so kind of him.
Oh,
actually.
Absolutely. Mm. He was a very aware man.
He loved you, obviously.
Very much. And I loved him very much. Mm. And I suppose that probably was the tragedy. And when eventually our friends knew, you know, it was, you know, how can you sit there and say you love him very much or he loves you very much and this is happening? And I said, maybe because we really do love each other that much. I mean, we've always been totally honest with each other. We're great talkers, great conversationalists. We shared an awful lot of stuff.
And it's probably why your two sons now are also, aren't they very balanced and happy and
absolutely
get on great with Marion?
Terrific, you know, absolutely. They feel blessed. They have two mammies now and a daddy. So they're doing really well out of it. And my grandsons have two nannies, well, more than two, but two nannies, what live in Ireland.
And how was Mrs. Brown, a.k.a. your brother Brendan, about all of this?
He had no issue with it whatsoever, other than, are you happy? And if you're happy, we're happy. No problem. And, you know, Brendan, sod the begrudges.
But I can see you before me now, how happy you are as a couple.
Yes.
Is it like a eureka moment when you do come out to yourselves?
Oh, yes. For me, it was.
Yeah.
The liberation, the freedom, the pure joy of not pretending anymore.
Yeah.
You know, not having to watch what you're going to say. I can't describe it to people. The burden of pretense is gone.
And you the same?
My first Pride March, Gay Pride March, was in Cork City, in my own hometown. Well, I was really proud of that. Now, the first 100 yards, I was looking around thinking, oh my God. After that, then I forgot. And I just loved it. And I thought that was, it was a particularly large march as well.
Yeah.
So I felt very proud to march in that in my hometown.
Did you ever think, Eilish, when you met this other woman and you in the end left your husband and your sons, was there a moment where you thought, no, I better stay in my marriage for the sake of my sons and my husband? And if you had done that, what do you think that would have done to you?
$6 million question. Very hard to answer. Yes, there was a moment when I thought, moment for both of us, myself and my husband, where we thought, should we make this work? Should we stay together for the children? But as he said, you know, it would be a huge disservice to the children and a huge disservice to us to do that. What we can do for the children is we can be very adult about this breakup. We can support each other and love each other within this. And they can see by example that sometimes things don't work out But it doesn't mean that we're going to hate each other or there's going to be a battle or anybody's really going to suffer because of it. So I don't know what would have happened if I had said, OK, we'll stay, I'll stay. I have no idea. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I would never have said, for instance, when I was coming up to my 40th birthday, that I was going to meet a woman and fall in love with her. That was never, ever, ever going to happen.
It's those Shirley Valentine extra mural courses.
Yes,
bad idea.
Absolutely. They have a lot to answer for. I mean, they say the change
find
of life.
Yourself. Yeah,
and you see, I think the change of life, it, you know, it has more to it than we give it credit for. Yeah. It can literally mean a change in life. And in my case, it did. It is a very dangerous age for a woman. I will agree. It is a very dangerous age for a woman.
But listen, what a great man your ex-husband is.
Absolutely.
I have to say, I'm really impressed. I have never met him.
Very, very sound guy. And thankfully, I was with someone like that who some people might think, say, made it easy for me. It wasn't easy. Mm. It wasn't easy for him and it wasn't easy for me. Mm. But we were there for each other. We still are there for each other. We still co-parent, even though they're well and truly settled. But we still keep in touch and talk about, you know, how they're doing and how his life is, how my life is. He's met Marion.
Has he met someone else?
He has recently.
Great.
In the last year, he has met somebody else.
Happy ending.
He seems very happy.
Well, look, we're going to take the next piece of music, which I think you love, the Imelda May.
Yes,
Town
I love
Why
that.
Do you love it?
I love it because I love Imelda May. I love her voice. I think she's just amazing. And it was songs like that, that kind of melody, that kind of rhythm, when I lived in the UK, would make me feel so homesick. Although it's about Kentish Town, it's that flavour, that Irish flavour to it, and the lovely tone of her voice. I just love it. I could listen to her all day.
There are roads for every ride. There's ups and there's downs. But you're the one for all my life, my true love I found. Yeah, you, my love.
Imelda May's Kentish Town there. First of all, we're going to take another piece of music, Marion. A piece your dad loved?
Yeah, it was my dad's favourite piece of music. He said that it haunted him all his life. He just absolutely loved it. And it's Marian Anderson. It's called Softly Wakes My Heart and it's from Samson and Delilah.
Why do you think he loved it so much?
Dad is a real soft gentleman. He was a gentle man. He loved nature. He loved animals. He loved birds. And that was the spirit of him. He was a gentle man. And I can really see how this piece of music affected him.
Were you close to him?
In the end, yes. He survived 3.5 years after my mum died. At that stage, he was in his 80s and blind. Touch was very important when you're blind and he loved music and he loved audio books and stuff. So we became really close in that 3.5 years. So when he actually died, I really felt not only had I lost a dad, but I'd actually lost a really good buddy.
Beautiful song there, Marian Anderson, Softly Awakes My Heart. I never heard that before. It's beautiful.
I'd never heard it until Dad mentioned it and I was well in my 40s.
Yes. Do you wish he'd met Eilish?
Yes, I think he'd have absolutely adored her. Now, how I would have explained her away, I have no idea. He'd have absolutely adored her. If Eilish had met my mum, they're actually quite alike. I think we would need a referee. But I think she'd have loved her anyway, just despite all that, yeah.
You both work together in this unbelievably successful Mrs. Brown's Boys. You're Winnie.
I am.
Mrs. Brown's best friend.
Yes.
Do you have as much fun as you look like you're having?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no pretense there. And it is terrific fun. I mean, I do have to pinch myself, Miriam, at times because the laughter, sometimes the tears are just running down our faces. you never know what Brendan is going to do. He has such a gift, and he's best when he's allowed be creative on the move, and he's not been controlled. So there's always a bit of space left there. He creates that space that when he decides he's going to do something mad, he does it.
And you spend a lot of your life as a brewery sales rep.
I did.
So yes. How did you become an actress?
Well, I always loved acting. And that demon was exercised through amateur dramatics mainly from very early on in my teens, which I continued when I moved to the UK. When I was coming back to Ireland, Brendan very kindly rang me and he said, look, you know, where are you going to settle when you come to Ireland? What is your plan? I had no plan. I was running away. I had actually no plan. So I said, well, I'm not sure where I want to settle. I'm not sure what I'm doing, to be honest with you, Brendan. So he said, look, I've got a play on the road at the moment. And he said, why don't you come on and do a bit of wardrobe, bit of this, bit of that, you know. And he said, we'll be in Wexford, we'll be in Galway, we'll be... And he said, you can have a look at all those places when you're there. And sure, if you like Galway, you can live in Galway. So that's exactly what I did. And
he's a very good brother then, isn't
oh,
he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he really is. You know, he's a very good man. His heart is bigger than this room. You know, he really is a very caring, generous man. And he'll know if you're going through a tough time. So, and doesn't make a big deal of it. Just gently put things into place so that if you want to take that opportunity, you can. So anyway, I ran away with the circus and it was a great place to hide. Because people are busy by its very nature. It's people are busy with their performances and was I good? Or, you know, there isn't the time to sit down.
So when did you become Winnie?
Well, that was in 1999. We opened in Cork and we were doing Mrs. Brown, the last wedding, the very first play. And one of the cast members needed to take some time out to do an RTE production. And Brendan asked me if I'd stand in and do Winnie. And I thought, well, you know, will I get a rehearsal? He said, no, you've been watching it often enough. He said, so you're on tomorrow night. And I did. And I've never stopped.
No, it's a hoot, though.
Right.
And you're the stage manager on the Mrs. Brown's tour going around. What does a stage manager do? I know, but for people listening, what do you do?
On the day we load in, I'm there with my crew and the set is unpacked, taken off the lorry, put up. Painted. When all that is done, I dress it and get the set ready for the lads coming in for the sound check. And then I look after all their props. I also do all the calls, which in the theatre is very easy because you just go to the tannoy and you say, come on, guys, it's 30 minutes. In an arena, it means walking 150 yards to the door and then 150 yards down the corridor to knock on each dressing room to say, come on, guys. And I do that 4 times before the show starts.
For almost 30 years, you worked in an accountancy firm. You're fascinating, the pair of you. It's like you're an ad for changing your lives.
Reinventing yourself, absolutely.
Well, Eilish has reinvented herself more times than I have. But I worked in a Japanese chemical company in the finance department for 28 years and I loved my job. So it was huge when they were going to pull out after nearly 30 years in the country. And Brendan offered me a job for 6 weeks to do merchandising, front of house before the show. And I actually loved that. I actually love meeting people.
Was very successful at it.
And I was quite successful at the old selling, which I didn't think I was. I actually just loved chatting to people. And if they bought, that was a bonus. Mm. So when the stage manager's job came up, then Brendan asked me if I'd like it. And Brendan is the kind of guy who'll give you a chance. Nowhere else would I have that chance. And I love the job and I think I do it pretty well.
Do you like working together?
Yes. Fortunately, we have two very different roles. So it doesn't kind of overlap. We're not competing with each other. And I think that's important. It is nice to have your partner on the road. We are away for such a long periods of time. I think it would be very difficult to sustain a healthy relationship if, you know, you're gone 3 months and back for 2 weeks and gone for another 2 months and that kind of thing. And especially at our age, we're fortunate. We don't have any, you know, small children or dependents or parents, you know, elderly parents to look after. So we can really please ourselves. So, yeah, it's working out. We're a bit scared about it at first, weren't we, Marion? Well, I was terrified.
Because of working together.
Yeah, because I said to her, you know, I felt, and I said, you kind of know me, you know, and you don't know my working environment. And I at the time thought, I'm a very different person when I'm working. I'm a very, very different person and you may not like it.
Well, what do you like?
I'm very focused.
Is she a pain?
And
she's not. Surprisingly enough, actually, I thought she'd be worse.
I think I was more concerned about, I didn't want to be responsible for Marion. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And I knew she was getting this. And I thought, now, if it doesn't work out for you, that's okay. But what I really wanted to say was, if it doesn't work out for you, I'm not going to do anything about that.
Mm.
You've got to take this opportunity if you want it and make it yours. And the same way as if I come to the end of the line with it, because for whatever reason, that doesn't mean you have to make decisions. We're not going to be attached at the hip. Although we're working for the same company, let's keep our separate individuality. And we've managed to maintain that.
So it's great she loved us and did work.
And I'm also no threat to Eilish because I can't act.
Yeah.
But so I'm never going to take over a Winnie role.
Oh, I wouldn't be too sure of that.
No, I'm telling you now.
And of course, you've also got your one-woman show.
And I also did my one-woman show. Yes.
Which is Live, Love, Laugh. What's that about?
Well, it's really, it's a woman's story. It happens to be mine. It's a woman's journey through her life from the time she was born, really, growing up in Dublin in the early 50s. And the kind of influences that society had on her and how it shaped her choices in life. And it takes you right through to the present day.
You chose a piece from it that you want her to read, Marion. Which one is it?
I did. To me, it's one of the funniest, lightest pieces, really, in Eilish's play. It's the story of the confession, which all of us at our age as Catholics remember that at 7 years of age, that dreadful fear.
Okay, so off you go, Eilish.
Thank you. Every little girl remembers her first communion. All dressed up like little brides, God's little angels. Despite me gunner eye and me clinicker glasses and the patch over me right eye, I was going to look like a little angel. I remember me mother got me up really early. I had her all to myself, which was a rare thing altogether, because all the others were asleep up in their beds. She stood me on the kitchen table to get me dressed. And everything she put on me was brand new. She was just putting the finishing touches to me veil and she stood back and she said, "Ah, darling, God didn't make you very beautiful, but he made you ever so lovable." I stopped liking God that very minute. Ah, Jesus, he could have made me beautiful. But before your first communion comes your first confession. Isn't it gas? 7 years of age and full of sin. My teacher used to beat into us, and I mean that literally, the Ten Commandments. She'd scream at us, "God is everywhere. He knows what you're thinking, and he knows when you're lying." She'd make us stick our tongues out and check for black marks. True indication of a liar, apparently. In preparation for our confession, she made us sit down and write down our sins and count how many times we had committed that sin. I remember waiting my turn to go into the confessional. I was so nervous. I was shaking from head to toe. So bad, in fact, that me gunner eye disappeared altogether and I had this awful sensation that I was going to wet myself. I stepped inside the confessional into the complete darkness. It took a minute for me eye to adjust to the light and I could just about make out the crucifix above me head on the wall as I knelt down before the wire mesh. Oh, Jesus, it moved. Oh, he's watching me. The only sound I could hear was my own heart beating and the sound of piss hitting the wooden floor. Suddenly the door behind the wire mesh opened. "Bless you, my child, you may begin." "Oh, bless me, Father, for I have sinned. This is my first confession. I told lies 10 times. I said feck 20 times and twice I said that awful word.
I disobeyed me mother 15 times and obeyed the head of me baby brother nearly every day. And I've just pissed on your floor, father. Oh, for these and all me other sins, I am truly sorry.
I can see why you chose that, Marion. Very, all the Carols. Are you all talented?
Oh, absolutely. We're like the Von Trapp family.
It's been hugely successful, your one-woman show. Do you enjoy doing it?
I love doing it. It's very nerve-wracking because it's very different to what I've been doing. And you're kind of standing on your own as well. And it's about an hour and 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't have an interval. But once I get into the flow and once I get into the story, I actually love it. I become each stage again. And it's a great opportunity to live those times in your life again.
And you're the stage manager on that as well, Marion, aren't you?
Oh, yeah, but it's dead. That one is so easy.
But does it mean more to you in a way because it is Eilish and her personal narrative?
It does. Like when I met Eilish first, Eilish was always writing. And the more I knew her, the more I knew that there was a one-woman show in here.
Do you encourage her?
I did encourage her, very much, because I knew it was there. So it was lovely to work on that. That was something that was Eilish's and that we could both work on together.
It took me years to actually share, to show anybody. Marion was probably the first person I ever said, well, OK, have a look at that. And terribly nervous because I was terrified I was going to come back with red marks all over it. Could do better, you know what I mean?
And when you read it?
I was blown away by it. I love Eilish's style of writing. I love her command of the English language. You know, I think she's got a real talent I'm really proud.
You know, I left school at 14 and you know, when Marion's saying, you know, I've got a great command of the English language, I don't think I have. It's the belief system, isn't it? And that's very much in the play. But this story is about how a woman changes that, how she has reinvented herself.
Which you both have.
Which we
absolutely
both have.
Absolutely, yeah. And we're not finished yet.
And certainly not finished yet.
Are you going to take this play around the country this year?
I've been asked to do the Edinburgh Festival for a promoter's
that's
asked
fantastic.
Me.
That's fantastic.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I'm not sure whether they're going to be able to do it because, again, there's a movie coming up with Mrs. Brown's Boys. But yes, it is my plan to actually take it to theatres and perform it.
Well, as the masters or mistresses of reinvention, what's going to happen in 2013 as we come to a close today?
More of the same. Listen, if it's not broken, don't fix it. You know, we're having a great life. We never take that for granted, Miriam. We both always say to each other on a regular basis, how lucky are we?
Well, look, I'm delighted you're both so happy because you deserve happiness. And I'm delighted you found each other. We're going to end on a piece of music. What's the last piece of music today?
Oh, the last piece of music is...
In the Summertime.
By Mungo Jerry. Which is a song that brings lovely memories back for both of us as teenagers. And again, it's just a happy song.
You both love happy songs.
Absolutely.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, listen, I just want to thank you both very much. Let me know if you're getting married, OK?
I'll be there. Absolutely. You'll be first on the invite list.
When they legalise marriage, we will.
OK.
You'll be at the head table.
Maybe. It's a date, OK?
It's a date.
My thanks on sound today to Ciara Murphy, to my producer Eileen Hare, and we'll be here at the same time next Sunday. Until then, we'll go out listening to a song they both love, Mungo Jerry.
In the summertime, when the weather is high, you can stretch right up and touch the sky. When the weather's fine, you got women on your mind.
Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1. Listen back or podcast at rte.ie/radioplayer.